Alrighty, so good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Magnolia Public Schools Regular Finance Committee meeting. My name is Jennifer Lara. I'm the Executive Assistant and Board Secretary at Magnolia Public Schools. I will be facilitating tonight's meeting. Just a couple of reminders. First, this meeting is being recorded. Second, if you're a member of the public and you wish to make public comments during the public comments sections of this meeting, you're more than welcome to state your name if it is something that you feel uncomfortable in doing so. You do not have to state your name. But as a reminder to our staff, please state your name and your title when presenting yourself to the board and to the public. And for our committee members as well, if you may state your name before giving your comment or your question. So with that, we'll officially begin tonight's meeting. The day is Wednesday, September 7th, 2022. The time is 7:02 p.m. With that, Dr. Dickbush, if you may please call the meeting to order.
Yes, I'd like to call the regular finance meeting committee to order.
Thank you, Dr. Dickbush. With that, I'll take roll call vote. Dr. Dickbush?
Here.
Thank you. Mr. Mohamedov?
Here.
Thank you. Dr. Yapano? Alrighty. So with that, we do have quorum to continue tonight's meeting. Thank you for that. So now we'll be moving on to the approval of agenda. The motion is to approve the agenda as presented. Would a committee member like to move the motion?
I'll move, Mekhan.
Thank you, Mr. Mohamedov.
I will second.
Thank you for that, Dr. Dickbush. So now I'll take roll call vote. Dr. Dickbush?
Yes.
Yes, Mr. Mohamedov?
Yes.
Yes. Thank you to our committee members. The agenda has been approved as presented. Next, we'll move on to public comments. As a reminder, you're given 3 minutes to state your comment. 6 minutes of translation is needed. If you're a member of the public and you wish to give a public comment, you may unmute yourself now. Perfect. If no public comments, we'll move forward next with the approval of minutes from the MPS Regular Finance Committee meeting on June 21st, 2022. Would a committee member like to move the motion?
I'll move, Mekhan.
Thank you, Mr. Mohamedov. Is there a second?
Yeah, I'll second it.
Thank you, Dr. Dickbush. With that, I'll take roll call vote. Dr. Dickbush?
Yes.
Yes, Mr. Mohamedov?
Yes.
Yes. Thank you to our committee members. The minutes for June 21st, 2022 has been approved. Now we'll move on with the recommended action items, starting with 2A, approval of 2021 through 22 unaudited actuals. This will be presented by Mr. Budaraja, our Chief Financial Officer.
Okay. Well, good evening, everyone. I hope you can hear me okay. So I will be going over the unaudited actuals report for the last fiscal year, being 21-22, ending June 30th, 2022. And so those of you that know, we adopt a budget prior to July 1 per statute, per California statute, and we go ahead and adopt our budget, and then we spend about a month and a half or so, a couple of months during the summer, closing out the books for the prior fiscal year. So that means that July and August are largely spent reconciling accounts and making sure that we have accurate data for which we collect receivables from various different state and federal resources. And then we also look at all of our payables and adjust our budget to reflect funds that were brought in or dispersed during the 21-22 year. So I'll talk a little bit about some of the changes that were noted during the last fiscal year. Our ADA, we experienced a decline of 3392. This is a reduction of 3802 from the prior year. As we know, we dealt with COVID last fiscal year, and there was a lot of circumstances which caused us to experience loss of ADA. And so this is something that LEAs throughout the state have experienced, and we faced it as well. And so that's where we were from the ADA enrollment standpoint. Our revenues totaled out to be $66.8 million, and this represented an increase of about $1.64 million from the second interim report, which I shared with you back in March of 2022. Our expenditures of $64.9 million represent an increase of 600,000 from the second interim budget. And if you recall, during second interim, we had anticipated, we had some various estimates out there. We did not have the benefit of the May revise from the governor. And so we were relying on projections from the January proposal. And so some of the budget assumptions that we had, we obviously did not have full information in terms of state COLA and other factors. So that information became apparent as we moved on through the year. Overall, the revenues, the additional federal and state revenues contributed to increases. As I mentioned, this had to do with one-time ESSER funding, and we were also able to capture reimbursement as it relates to COVID-19, which we really carefully took a look at our expenses that relates to the pandemic, whether that be on PPP or masks or test kits. We really did a good job in terms of accounting for our costs, and we were able to work with our local county offices and be able to get reimbursed for the money that we spent on COVID-19 related expenses. On the expenditure side, we had an increase in expenditures. Obviously, a lot of it had to do with loss of learning, additional special education costs. Dealing with the pandemic, we had lots of challenges in the sense of getting kids back to school and being able to acclimate them with a regular classroom instructional environment when we had 2 years of really limited access to regular classroom instruction. So it was a lot of makeup for that. And so we had costs that were associated with getting kids back up to speed, some of that which we'll continue to see here during the current fiscal year. We also had some costs associated with facilities planning. As you know, we've got multiple projects that we're working on. So we're expending money in terms of costs, legal fees, things like that on these facilities projects, which we're gonna see come to light during the next few years. And so overall, we had a positive net income. Magnolia Public Schools had a net operating surplus of $1.86 million, which represents slightly over a million dollar increase from the second interim budget. So this is all the sites, including the home office. So collectively, we were able to generate surpluses. And so that's obviously a good thing, adding to our fund balance and being able to operate in the black. So I'm definitely pleased to be able to announce that. If we could move on to the next page, please. And so here you'll see a consolidated summary. And so this is where you'll see our enrollment of 3392, our total revenues. You see that LCFF makes up a large percentage of our revenues. $40 million of the $66.8 million come from LCFF. And then you have a significant amount of federal revenues, $12.2 million. And then other state revenues, these are programs such as lottery, special ed, mandated costs, about $7.5 million there. And then other local revenues from various sources. Some of these have to do with the reimbursements, the COVID-19 reimbursements that I had indicated previously, to the tune of about $6.9 million. So totaling out, we received $66.8 million in revenues for unaudited actuals. And then on the expenditure side, we ended up spending $64.9 million, leaving us with a surplus of $1,858,884, about $1.86 million. Dollars roughly. And you can see the bulk of our costs really on the expenditure side have to do with salary and benefits, $40.2 million there out of the total, $64.9 is having to do with salary and benefits, personnel costs. And then we obviously have our book supply services, as you can see there, as well as some capital outlay and depreciation. So all in all, a positive year. A challenging year, but we did end up in the positive in terms of our fund balance. So this additional $1.86 million added to our beginning fund balance, which was $41.7 million, leaving us an ending fund balance of $43.6 million. Bulk of that, as you can see there, is cash, about $28.7 million available in for economic uncertainties, and then other monies associated with assets that we have. So our ending fund balance for the year was $43.6 million, as you can see on the bottom there. And now I'll go ahead and give you an overview by site. And I'll, if you could please make that a little bit bigger, Jennifer. Thank you. Okay, great. So this is just kind of, I'll give you a rundown by individual school site, and I'll kind of walk you through the expenditures, the revenues, the expenditures, what was left over, and kind of give you some highlights of the individual school site. So we can go ahead and start with MSA 1, our school that's been around the longest, and obviously the one that generates a significant amount of ADA. We had our P2 ADA, which is the mathematical value of our enrollment, basically. So ADA is the money we received for the kids that showed up. So that was about 676 of the total enrollment of 737. So we received 12.2 million in revenues for MSA 1, and that was offset by 11.1 worth of expenditures, leaving us, these are second interim numbers. So I can kind of give you an overview, and then in the next section, I'll give you what it was. But I do want to compare this, because this is the last piece that you saw, and I want to kind of compare this to our unaudited actuals. So when we did our March second interim, we had projected that we would have a total surplus of 813,000, if you can see on the bottom right there. And so this is kind of a comparison of what we had shared, and you can see there MSA 3, MSA 4, MSA 6, and some of the other sites, we actually had deficit spending. And a lot of this had to do with the fact that there were some unknowns, as I mentioned before. The state COLA finally that was announced was ended up being 6.56%. We received some additional monies for special education that we did not anticipate. We were able to get some additional reimbursements for COVID-19. So this is what was shared with you guys back in March. Now, if we can please go to the next piece, and I want to get to the final number. So this is the actual final data by site. And so as you can see there, MSA 1, still very much 12.2 million worth of revenue, 11.2 worth of expenditures, and we ended up with a net revenue of close to $1 million, 995,000, as you can see there. Adding to the fund balance, MSA 1's net ending fund balance was 8.9, close to $9 million. So a good year. MSA 2, total revenue, 7.46 million, offset by approximately close to $7 million worth of expenditures, ending with a $469,000 surplus and ending fund balance of 3.5 million. And these two schools, I want to point out, these two schools actually experienced a growth of enrollment during the pandemic. These were the two schools that we had that did actually see growth and see enrollment go up during the pandemic. Which is certainly a great thing for us to be able to see. MSA 3, we're looking at 7.1 million worth of revenues, offset by close to 7.1 million worth of expenditures, with a small surplus of approximately close to $13,000, as you can see there, and then allowing for that ending fund balance that you can see there of about close to 2.2 million. Now, as we get to MSA 4, We've got some sites that obviously have some challenges as it relates to enrollment. MSA 4 being an example, we had $2.3 million worth of revenues, offset by close to that 2.27 worth of expenditures, leaving about $45,000 worth of a net revenue, and then allowing for that ending fund balance that you see there of $1.26 million. Again, monitoring the enrollment for MSA 4. Taking a look at MSA 5, $4 million worth of revenues, offset by $3.52 million worth of expenditures, allowing for a net revenue of $478,000, and then seeing that ending fund balance go to $3.5 million. So doing fine there at MSA 5. MSA 6, similar to MSA 4, with dealing with some challenges as it relates to enrollment. $1.78 million worth of revenues, offset by $1.77 million worth of expenditures, allowing for a small, approximately $7,400 surplus or net revenue, I should say, and and ending fund balance of approximately 2.41 million. And now going on to MSA 7, this is our TK through 6. So we've got $4.5 million. This is very much kind of just a very much balanced budget here, $4.53 million worth of revenues offset by close to that $4.52 million worth of expenditures, allowing for a small surplus of close to $5,000 and that $2.5 million ending fund balance. Now moving on to MSA 8, we have $6.5 million worth of revenues offset by $6.4 million worth of expenditures, allowing for a net revenue of about $98,000, close to $99,000, call it, and then having that ending fund balance of $6.2 million. MSA Santa Ana, this is by budget size, our second largest school. And so we've got $9.97 million worth of revenues, offset by $9.7 million worth of expenditures. And here you see MSA Santa Ana obviously has had, we've had expenses associated with capital outlay and facilities, and that's reflected here of about $770,000. And we still were able to end with a net income of $234,171, as you can see, and an ending fund balance of about $9.34 million. Finally, MSA San Diego, very much, very close to just being a balanced budget here, about $5.1 million worth of revenues, offset by about $5 million worth of expenditures, allowing for a net revenue of about $79,000, as you can see there, and total ending fund balance of close to $1.3 million. And so now I'm gonna get to our MERC, our home office. As you know, our home office does not serve any students. We basically serve our school sites and are able to generate revenue from our fees that we charge our school sites. So the MERC budget during adoption was $5.7 million worth of revenues, offset by expenditures of $6.3 million. We had some additional staff, additional costs, including one-time one-time bonuses, retention bonuses for staff, as well as some payments, professional services, tax payments, and things like that. And so we did end the year with a deficit of $567,000, but still allowing us to maintain a close to $2.4 million ending fund balance. So collectively, we're looking at that number, as I shared with you, of about $43.6 million as our current net asset balance, as you can see. And so so this is basically how we closed the year, a challenging year, and obviously one that was, you know, filled with uncertainty up until January, where we were still doing testing and paying for all these different expenses associated with COVID mandates and school closures. So it was definitely a very challenging year, just financially and I can imagine logistically, and for our students, our staff, parents, et cetera. So, but we were able to maintain that revenue, and we were able to get through what was a very challenging year. So I'd be happy to open it up to any further questions or discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Budraj. Is there any questions or comments from the members of the public? If not, committee members, do you have any questions or comments regarding this item?
Thanks, Steve, for putting this together. It's good to have a look back at the previous year. I like the format here, the site by site on one glance. That helps a lot. Just a couple of comments. So the challenging schools seems to be continue to be challenged. They are at the very edge, and I'm sure you noticed that of MSA 6. And I'm a little bit surprised to see the MSA 7 in this. And I believe you had spoken to the principal as well there regarding the reasons of having younger kids and families not staying due to costs and everything. And the, of course, thirdly, the MRF. If you could just briefly talk about the central office, how we're planning to do and to address the deficit going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you know, Mr. Mohamedov, we have we've had a CMO fee structure in place for a number of years now, and we've had to make modifications from time to time based on you know, different requests that we've had from various authorizers. And so this fee structure was looked at carefully throughout the year, and ultimately when we did our adopted budget for the 22-23 school year, I had brought forward along with the budget a CMO fee memorandum, or just a fee agreement, which described how we would charge CMO fees. And so what we came at, what we brought forward with our adopted budget to help avoid and mitigate any potential concerns as it relates to deficit spending and that sort of thing, was really incorporating the full expenses of the 6.3, call it somewhere between 6.3 and $6.4 million that it costs to run the home office to be able to provide various services, including facilities, HR, finance, various types of instructional programs, things that we bring to our school sites. And so we wanted to kind of clean up our fee structure and make sure that it was consistent with what we have in our what we've had in place over the years. So I think that once that was done in July and implemented moving forward into July 1, that is currently in place. So we anticipate being able to have a balanced budget for the home office to where we're collecting about 6.3 to 6.4 million. And our expenses are about that much. So we don't have any significant amounts of carryover or deficit at the year end. So that's how we were able to mitigate that. Your question in regards to the declining enrollment, obviously it's a challenge, and we see it, you hear about it on the news about, you know, families leaving the state for other places, you know, Arizona, Texas, I've heard Florida, different places. And it's particularly challenging for those sites that operate the TK through six. You know, they've got young families with younger children, and we've seen a trend of those specific, you know, demographics, you know, leaving. And so that's where it's certainly been a challenge for sites like MSA 7 to be able to retain students. And so that's something we're gonna continue to face, and we're gonna continue to carefully monitor that as we move into the current school year. And I think it's certainly a valid point, and it's something we have to really, really carefully look at.
Yeah, that's I'll just add to that. That's a great question, Makan. Obviously, in 21-22, we made a commitment to bring a chief external officer to make employee number 26, with the primary focus to focus on enrollment and also fundraising. Enrollment, you'll get an update tomorrow, which again, it'll show the challenge of enrolling students and maintaining that, which is something definitely we have to continue to wrap our heads around, but come up with strategies. On the fundraising part, all the schools, because of the community school coordinator grant, now have one person each, 9 out of the 10 campuses in San Diego wasn't open. So obviously we took a risk with that position, but it is paying dividends, not necessarily money to the home office, but to the school sites in those positions. And then the MPSS money that came, that $536,000, is now being utilized by the teachers and the schools to get a certification pathway. The other position was the facilities project manager, employee number 27, that wasn't included in the 2021 budget. We added 21-22, obviously, with the Winneka project, the JAM building, which you just approved, the CUP, which will allow us to add more students to MSA 7 from 279 to 500, and then the search for MSH 2, which is ongoing. And then the hope is we get the charter school facility grant. And then specific to the sites, the work that's been done at 1-7 Santa Ana, San Diego on the project. So it has paid huge dividends. Obviously it doesn't show up here in terms of the net revenue, because is it added position. The next one would be the Director of State and Federal Programs, working in the Accountability Department, ensuring that every federal and state cent is spent specific to the LCAP, and making sure that we are providing those services, and then also helping the school sites in writing the different templates. With the extra funding does come different templates that we have to submit to the state. You as a board got to approve the Educator Effectiveness Grant. We got to approve the ELOP task force plan, also worked on by the academic team. And then multiple plan, the ESSER 3 plan also, and many more. So that position has played huge dividends in terms of how we spend money, but also in compliance with our documents. And then the last position would be the College and Career Readiness and TOSA program. That's position number 29. So that position, of course, is supporting the college counselors to improve our graduation A through G rate. And that has happened, and it's now much stronger in terms of concurrent dual enrollment. So another position doesn't necessarily bring. So the goal for us, again, is to be very strategic besides enrollment, which I do believe will, you know, continue to be a challenge and stay stagnant. What we have to do is get more money that does come to the schools, does come to the home office. That's going to be the strategy, because I do think with the incoming possible flatlining of income, also revenue coming, it's going to come from the fundraising, the philanthropy we get to be able to then have a positive income for the home office, because the positions are definitely paying off in us meeting our CEO metrics. But right now the deficit is because, again, we're not able to meet the enrollment targets. One of the things that I wanted to add is that in what you're seeing here, we did have, you know, projected when the board did adopt the budget, 3,780 students, 3,790, and then we ended up at 3,708. Obviously, when we adopted the budget, we projected a 96% ADA, because that was consistent what we did before, 1920, which was the last year we were in person. So then what happened with the pandemic and COVID and isolation and quarantine, that did go down to a little bit above 91%. The good thing is that that was fought by us, and we advocated quite a bit. And that money was signed in the governor's budget, the 21-22, you know, ADA mitigation, the loss of that money. So the governor did say that although your ADA was 92% because of the pandemic and all these other factors, we will bring it up to 96%. And also your enrollment, which at that time in 1920 was closer to, you know, 3,857, now down 3,708, that we're going to obviously give you that extra money in this in kind of protection mode, right? Unfortunately, this money doesn't come to us. It's not reflected here. So it will come to us February 2023. So we'll be able to use it for next year's budget or this year's budget, 22-23. But as Steve mentioned, yes, we do have to be very creative and strategic, because I do believe enrollment will continue to be a challenge, but we have to get the philanthropy and fundraising in order to afford position number 26 to 29 to keep servicing our schools.
Yeah, and just to add Alfredo's point, we were, you know, because the information on Hold Harmless became available after we adopted our budget, on June 23rd, and we found out, I want to say around early July, that Hold Harmless would pass and we would be afforded the opportunity. We were not able to accrue those funds for the 21-22 year. And so right now, current estimates are somewhere potentially between 5 million or so, maybe more or less, that we can bring in during February of 2023. And those estimates are being calculated as we speak, and as that information becomes available, I'd be, you know, obviously more than happy to share what those numbers look like as I get them.
Thank you. Thank you, Alfredo. Thank you, Steve. And absolutely. And the MRF budget, I mean, going forward, let's plan a budget where it's balanced and actually there is reserves, you know. If we need to like act on something, we should probably get the CMO to a point where, you know, we have reserves and we are confidently making the hirings and everything else. But thank you. Thank you both.
Definitely, definitely. Thank you for the feedback.
Any further questions from the committee?
Yeah, I have a comment. And I'd like to thank, I guess, CFO, finance team, principals, and whoever else chimed in to put together the budget. I'm glad to see, like, from second interim to unaudit, turning five reds into black. So that's good news. And hopefully moving forward, as we discussed, I guess home office will also be turning black, and hopefully red will be getting reduced. So the question I have is, in recent years, like last year before, are we also looked into the budget, like from unaudited to after audit, like if we made corrections based on their feedback, did we also essentially look into those parts in detail so that we make as minimal change as possible from unaudited to audited results? That's what I wanted to check.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. And that's a very good question. So what we do basically is we close our books, as I mentioned, we close our books from July 1 till about the statutory deadline is September 15th to submit the unaudited actuals to the state. And so during the time that we're closing our books, we're working with our auditors. They're taking a look to see our processes and how we're reconciling our fund balances, how we're booking accruals, how we're listing payables and receivables and all of that. And then what they do is they come in after we close our books. And so they comb through all of this data and then a lot more data to take a look and verify, did we properly account for all our funds? Now, last year, when we looked at last year's audit, there were no changes to our fund balance from the unaudited actuals to the audited actuals. That means that when we closed our books, we properly accounted for all of the money coming in and all of the money going out. So at this time, we don't anticipate that there will be any changes once the auditors have reviewed this information. We expect that these will be the final numbers. Now the audit, you know, the auditors will come in and continue to look and see how we did our year-end closing. They'll issue their audit report right around December or January towards the end of the year. And so we will receive our audited financial statements right around January of 2023. And that's where you'll see these numbers reflect in our actual hardbound audit report that's published annually, that's public information that's available that we rely on for various different things. So very good question. So we don't expect these numbers to change. We expect the auditors to concur with this information.
Okay, sounds good. Yeah, because I didn't recall, I guess, how it was last year. Just wanted to make sure that we are being proactive. And if there was no issue, that's great news. Hopefully we will continue the same way. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
Any last questions from our committee members? Perfect. If not, the motion is for the committee to approve of the fiscal year 2021 through 22 unaudited actuals report for Magnolia Public Schools and further recommends that the committee move and recommend for the board to adopt the same. Would a committee like to move the motion?
Yeah, I'll move the motion.
Thank you, Dr. Dickbush. Is there a second?
Seconded, Mika.
Thank you, Mr. Mohamedov. With that, I'll take roll call vote. Dr. Dickbush?
Yes.
Yes, Mr. Mohamedov?
Yes.
Yes. Thank you to our committee members. The motion carries with unanimous approval. Now we'll be moving on to recommended action item 2B, approval of ERC funding and agreement and engagement with CFO MW Tax LLC. This will also be presented by Mr. Budaraja, our Chief Financial Officer.
Okay, so this is obviously something I'm happy to share with you. The ERC is an employee retention credit. This was information that was approved along with the CARES Act in 2020 during the pandemic. And basically what this is additional funding from COVID-19 that we are allowed to apply for based on the fact that we did incur expenses during the pandemic, during both 2020 and 2021 in terms of payroll expenses. And we were able to keep our doors open and continue to pay our staff, and we were able to be good, responsible food. And so as a result, we looked into this tax credit, which is very similar to the PPP program that we applied for some time ago, probably about a year ago. And so what we did was, this is basically funding that can be applied for with the help of some additional support from contracted services. And they do basically looking at our historical payroll data, taking a look at our financials and how much we've spent during certain years. We take a look at the time that we were closed during the pandemic, our costs that were incurred. And so we sought out the, we took a look at some different organizations that provide these services, and we wanted to obviously shop for the best potential deal for this organization. So three things that were looked at were, how much can we get potentially from this employee tax credit, employee retention credit, I'm sorry. And then what are the costs associated with it? And then how long will it take to get this money? So we reached out to some different organizations, spent a number of weeks talking with various individuals about this program and to see what the cost would be and how much we can get. And estimates range from $2.8 to $3 million on the lower side, up to $7 million on the higher side. The fees ranged between 15%. And then here you have before you, we were able to negotiate, and I want to make a correction. I want to make sure that this is stated for the record. We were able to negotiate a fee of 9% for this agreement, and not 12% listed there. I had a previous version of this, so my apologies for that. So we are anticipating receiving anywhere between $5 to $6 million from this program. We're expecting the fees to be 9% of that total. So after fees, we're looking at somewhere in the neighborhood, as I mentioned, of between $5 to $6 million. We don't know the exact amount yet. We are expecting to begin work on this as soon as possible, to begin filing the necessary paperwork and reaching out to the necessary individuals within the IRS and taking a look to really maximize how much money we can receive from this employee retention credit. And estimates in terms of timing, filing this data and getting the monies back range between, I've heard 10 months to a year, and then I've heard over a year plus. And for this particular agreement, the estimate is approximately 6 to 8 months that we're anticipating receiving the funding. So we felt that based on the fact that the fee structure was reasonable, it was lower than the average, the firm has done work with charters before, so they're familiar with the landscape and they're familiar with the fact that, you know, our teachers have a certain designation and they pay into Medicare, but they don't pay into Social Security. And so there's a lot of nuances related to this program, and specifically us being a nonprofit charter. And so we felt that this would maximize the amount of funding that we could potentially receive with a minimal amount of costs and a reduced turnaround in terms of actually getting the money. So we would love to be able to apply for this and be able to get some additional funding coming in for the 2020 and 2021 school years, in which we we incurred costs during the pandemic.
Is that it?
No, Steve, do you want to add the context of the due diligence we did to get different quotes from different vendors?
Yeah, absolutely. So we reached out to a firm that does audit services, and we talked with them. Their numbers came in on the lower end, and from that particular organization, we heard that the turnaround time is going to be longer. There's a lot of people applying for this, and we thought that we could go and try to be able to really maximize these revenues. And then we also dealt with a secondary organization back east that offered additional funds in terms of reimbursements. However, I was not comfortable with their experience in terms of dealing with organizations such as ours, a nonprofit 501c3 charter organization. So having a lack of experience was a little bit cause for concern, even though they did, you know, try to encourage us and indicate to us that they would get maximize, you know, $7 million. You know, the fee structure was high. It was 15%. And similarly with the audit firm, also a 15%. And so in this case, the third option that we looked at was working with an organization who's A, done this in the past, worked with schools within California, has experience in both tax law and, you know, and finance and budgeting, and was able to do it at a price that was reasonable. And we've looked into some other organizations and seen that they were able to get some funding, you know, filed and received in a timely manner. So after doing our due diligence and looking at all the different variables, as I mentioned, the total maximum amount of funding, the fees, and then the time frame, we felt that this was the best option of the three. And so that's why I'm bringing this forward to you, to this group.
Thank you, team. Is there any questions or comments from the members of the public? If not, committee members, do you have any questions or comments regarding this item?
Thanks, Steve. This sounds exciting and great. Couple of questions. So this is 12%, right? Once we get the refund, then in 30 days, we give them back 12% of the proceeds. Is that right?
It's actually 9%, and I apologize. Right. It does state 12% on there, but we had negotiated with them, and we really tried to maximize. So I had inadvertently put a previous version of it, but it is, I want to state for the record that, and we have it obviously in correspondence with the organization, with the firm, that it is going to be 9% fee, not 12%. So I just want to make that 100%. You know,
okay, clear. So if we get $100,000, then we pay $9,000.
Correct.
Okay. All right. And probably for tomorrow's meeting, probably will come updated, right?
Well, it's, you know, I think because of the fact that we have to post in a certain amount of time, but I can certainly have the gentleman from the firm be present for tomorrow's meeting and be able to answer any questions. So that's not a problem.
Okay.
No, Steve, the question was to update the agreement. So we could have the updated agreement to reflect the 9% instead of 12. We can do that.
Oh, yeah. We can do. I'm sorry. I think I misunderstood. Yeah, we can do that. Certainly.
Absolutely. And second follow-up I have is, so the rules of this grant or of this funds allows us to hire out, maybe I missed it, you mentioned it, but I couldn't see it on the paper. It allows us to use the proceeds to pay third party company, right? It is a federal fund. So I was just curious about it.
Right, yeah. So basically the way it works is if they don't get us any money, they don't charge us anything. So it's—
No, I understand. Once, let's say we get money, right? Okay. So this is federal money, right? This comes from IRS, right?
Yes.
So is it okay to spend, like, let's say we get $1 million, we're gonna send $90,000 to this company. I'm sure with these federal grants, we have to do reporting back to them. So it's okay to say that, hey, 9% of these funds we paid to this company, private company, to get these funds. That's okay, right?
There will— Yes, that's okay. There are costs associated with doing the work and the time that it takes. And so, yeah, that's perfectly fine.
Okay. Okay, because we had the, you know, startup grants when we were just opening the schools, and that amount, for example, if they wrote a grant for us, could not exceed 5%, or some grants you just couldn't use it, and some grants had limits like that. So I was just curious. So if that's okay per rules of this grant to use outside firms, then we should be fine.
Yeah, I think they have a specialization in this that I think that is—
No. I have no doubt about the company. I mean, I'm not talking about the vetting of the company. You guys did it, and you know, you talked about it. It's just that
IRS rules for distribution of these funds are okay to send this money to third party company once we approve for this grant.
Yeah, that is great.
I'm good. Yeah, this sounds exciting. Yeah, let's do it. And hopefully, yeah, this would be more funds to schools that we could use and go forward. Thank you for bringing this up.
Before reading the motion, any last questions?
Yeah, quick question. I think I missed the part. Other than this company, how many did we look into and picked out this out of? Like, is it two others we looked into and this is the best one?
We looked at three and we picked one of the three.
Okay, sounds good. I think at least three is good. Thanks.
Perfect. If no further questions, the motion is for the committee to approve the contract to file a refund claim under the Employee Retention Tax Credit per 26 USC subsection 3134, and further recommends that the committee move and recommend for the board to adopt the same. Would a committee member like to move the motion?
Yes, I happily move the motion.
Thank you, Dr. Dikbush. Is there a second?
I'll second it, Nikon.
Thank you, Mr. Mohamedov. With that, I'll take roll call vote. Dr. Dikbush?
Yes.
Yes, Mr. Mohamedov? Yes. Thank you to our committee members. The motion carries with unanimous approval. And that concludes all of our items for tonight's meeting. Thank you all for joining. At this time, I ask Dr. Dikbush if you may please adjourn. The time is 7:48 p.m.
Yeah, thank you everyone for joining. And I guess it seems we are finishing almost on time. I appreciate your promptness. I'd like to adjourn the meeting.
Great. Thank you everyone. Have a great night.
Thank you everyone. Good night.
Thank you everyone. Bye. Have a great evening.